So before we get into what I promise is quite a fun episode here, and before I hit the normal intro and everything, we do need to start on a somber note. And I really just want to take a minute or two here, talk about the passing of Duquesne's legendary radio play-by-play announcer Ray Goss, who, after an astounding 58 years on the job, died earlier this week from a heart attack at the age of 89. Duquesne grad in the 50s, who was a student there for some of the great teams in Duquesne basketball history, spent his 20s on that just kind of typical broadcaster's journey, bouncing around minor league baseball sites and different weird events before he finally got that Duquesne full-time gig that he kept for 58 consecutive years. Until the day he died. He had dealt with a car accident earlier this month. He had vowed that he would be back on the microphone next year for year number 59. And this guy was an absolute fighter and was just never going to lose his desire to be on the microphone. And that was one of the great things about him. Alas, of course, he's not going to get that opportunity, but I do just want to quickly talk because I've gotten the pleasure to meet Goss a couple of times. Really had two extended interactions with him, and I think they both just sum up just how kind of a person he was, which was always my greatest takeaway. Interaction number one, I was a kid, probably 8, 9, 10 years old, and to that point, he was my absolute favorite broadcaster. In fact, the entirety of my time growing up, he was my absolute favorite broadcaster. And just hearing him on the radio back in the day when a team like Duquesne was getting themselves on television 3, maybe 4 times a year. Crazy to think that that's the world we were still in just 20 or so years ago, but the radio was still so important even in the early 2000s for a young college basketball fan. And just about every road game, just listening to Goss and like following the box scores on CBS Sports, but he easily became the most important sports voice to me as a child. And one year, my parents reached out to him to just give me a chance to meet the guy, just say hello and to just talk to him a little bit. And being around this game now and knowing a fair amount of broadcasters myself and just seeing the amount of prep and focus that these guys do before the games just kind of shapes this story even differently than how I would have realized in the moment. But I got a chance to go meet him pre-game one day, and we must have talked for 20 to 30 minutes. And just an astounding amount of time to give anyone. At that time, most broadcasters I don't think would want to give their best friend more than about 90 seconds before a game. It's a quick hello, and then they got to get back to work. Him just giving me that amount of time and then letting me sit in on the broadcast for a game to sit there courtside, headphones on, and just experience the game in front of me, getting to listen to him talk in my ears the whole time was one of the best game experience I've gotten to have. And I just remember how amazing that was. I have no idea who they played. It's been so long ago, I don't have that recollection. I don't remember what happened in the game. I just remember sitting there with those big, bulky headphones on, getting to make comments to him on the commercial breaks. It was absolutely just fantastic. And then my second interaction came 2019, we were about 2 months into this show. We were getting probably about 15 listeners per episode, just recording with the Voice Memos app on our phones, sitting in chairs next to each other. And Matt and I would just pray that the audio worked out. And I still have no idea what he did for like editing in that first season, but one day, I just decided to try to reach out to the radio station that was broadcasting the Duquesne games at that point with just a simple ask. Could I get Ray Goss's contact info to invite him as a guest onto the podcast? They took it one step further, and within 60 minutes, I had a voicemail from the man himself. He was happy to do it. I got to meet up with him ahead of time. I don't think he ever had any idea what this medium was. I'm not sure he really knew what I was interviewing him for. And if he didn't, I don't think he cared. I think he was just happy to give his time once again to a young basketball fan. And that's the guy he was. He was an extreme people person and someone who absolutely loved Duquesne basketball, every bit of it. And he, the entirety of his 58-year career, he missed two games. One early on for an interview for a national TV NBA broadcasting job. And then after 977 consecutive games on the microphone, he missed a second for his wife's funeral. That was it. Two games. 58 years and still taking the time to talk to schmucks like me. He was the very first guest on this show. He insisted on introducing me to a then pretty new at the helm, Keith Tambrot. Just a wonderful guy to deal with. And I guess really the third story, not a personal one, but just the fact that he got to be on the microphone when Duquesne broke that 37-year streak, or oh my God, it's. I'm gonna leave the error in there because it just kind of sits home once again how crazy this was. The 47-year streak in between NCAA tournament appearances and what it meant to Duquesne fans specifically to hear his call at the end of that game, the great ghosts alive that he unleashed after they upset VCU to win the A-10 championship. And that clip's been passed around more times than I can say over these last couple of days. It's the first thing that everyone thinks of when they think of Ray Goss, and it's that will be the enduring moment that lives long, long past this. But one thing he told me in that very first interaction that I always remembered, that the one negative to his career, getting to cover all of those basketball games, is that he never felt like courtside was the best angle. He's right, by the way, but he always wanted a little bit of an elevation. And in Duquesne's arena, especially, the bottom of the upper deck is just an unbelievably perfect angle to see the game. And that's where Goss would have always wanted to sit if he had his preference. Get a little bit of height, just be able to see what's going on a little bit better. Well, it's going to take a long time for Duquesne fans to not feel the sting of turning on the radio broadcast and not hearing his voice anymore. But at least everyone can take comfort in knowing that for the Duquesne games for decades and on, he's going to get that little bit of elevation. He's going to finally get to watch the game from an angle that he prefers, from a more comfortable viewpoint. No more trying to have to see what these 7-footers are doing from sitting at their eye level. He gets his upper deck seat now. And yeah, I extremely heartfelt rest in peace to Ray Goss, one of just the absolute greats in broadcasting, the longest tenured broadcaster in the history of the sport of college basketball. And someone who kept that job until the day he died, because that's what Duquesne basketball meant to him. So, to Ray Goss, I think we'll all miss him. And I'll give him a moment of silence, and then we'll kick off the episode. Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. It is roster construction season, and so that is what we're going to talk about. As always, I am your host, Tyler. Two very special guests stepping in to join me here today. In the second half, I'm going to talk to our pal Tristan Freeman over at Busting Brackets. We're going to talk about the major remaining team needs in the A-10. Six teams still with huge holes to fill over these next couple of weeks. But before that, he is the great Jim Root of Three Man Weave, Basket Under Review, The Athletic. We're going to get his thoughts on where the league is headed towards next year. Jim, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, I'm pumped to be here. I'm curious if you guys are pondering a name change with the expansion to 76 teams. Are we aiming for a 4-bid league? Are we aiming for a 5-bid league? The dream is out there with the NCAA tournament expansion. But yeah, pumped to chop it up about the A10. I told you right before we got on air, generally a fan of what the league has been doing so far in roster building season here. A pretty solid April. So we'll get into the weeds and discuss the whos and the whys.
Jim, I am very excited that the 76-team NCAA tournament is going to lead to the third best A10 team being an NIT one seed for years to come. And this
That's the
still just
dream.
never going right.
Yeah, the 3-bid league's still going to be out there until we finally actually make it happen. And I think maybe it was Kevin Sweeney had the depiction of what the tournament could look like right now. I think Brendan Marks, my colleague at The Athletic, also did something similar, what it would have looked like this past year. And it's just, a whole bunch of other 17 and 16 teams and 16 and 16 middling power conference teams. Let's find a way to get an extra Dayton or a George Washington or something into the tournament and make this 3-bid league a true reality here.
Yeah, it could be somebody else, but that's why we got you here. So let's take those three kind of powerhouses right now, because you can see the money being spent this offseason, St. Louis, VCU, and Dayton. And we'll talk about them in a little bit. But as you're starting to go through these rosters, is there another one of the 11 teams that has caught your eye as, hey, these guys could maybe make a run next season?
I think the two that have jumped out the most, I guess in terms of winning the offseason, I say that in air quotes for those that are listening in the audio version, but I really like what Loyola Chicago has done. I think clearing house was probably the right move after a complete debacle of a season, hitting the reset button. Am I convinced that Drew Valentine's going to assemble it all together to make it a competent A10 title contender? I don't know. That's been sort of an up and down perspective for him there in Chicago, but I like that. And then GW has got the interesting approach of just like, all right, if you played 15 minutes a game at a power conference school, come on down to DC. We're going to insert you into our rotation. Not a ton of retention there, just Aaron Guerin at point. But I mean, you got Pitt, Colorado, NC State, Georgia, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame all on the roster right now, represented with transfers. So there's talent there. And the fit sort of intrigues me too. Some upsides, some pieces that maybe blend together well. But those two, I would say, just in terms of who really stands out, is maybe that fourth or fifth team that could jump up. I like the talent on their rosters. It's a matter of piecing it all together. And maybe I am falling in love too much with off-season additions rather than retention.
Yeah, I mean, being the offseason winner in the A10 normally spells doom. Last year, it was clearly GW. They finished in ninth, and I still have the same exact concern I had last year, which is that John Aaron Gurren's the closest thing they have to a real point guard, and that really, really worries me with them.
Yeah, it is, and it, like the collection of talent can always look better on paper than it executes in person. And looking at the roster, like I would imagine many of the guys on that team, none of them average double digits in the power conference level. No one, only Witherspoon at Pitt averaged over 20 minutes a game. I'm guessing a lot of them are like, all right, I'm going to the A10 for more touches, more chances to score, more chances to contribute. I'm not going to be a role player anymore. Well, when you've got seven guys from the power conference level to go with a 25-minute a game point guard in Aaron Guerin, somebody's going to have to be role players. And can Caputo assemble that together properly? I didn't feel like they, made all the talent work well together last year. You could also probably make an argument that last year's roster was a little better with Castro as the centerpiece inside. So yeah, it does. It could be kind of just like I'm seeing these dark, sparkling, dazzling gems or potential come together, and maybe the fit isn't going to work quite as well. But like Arsenault, and maybe I should be penalizing guys that leave Kelvin Sampson, but like he contributed so much to winning when he was there. Didn't really work out at Will Wade, despite I thought him being like a clear Will Wade player. Dylan James was a, considering he played 15 minutes a game in the SEC, I thought he'd be in high demand by power conference teams to be a piece. With the way the big man market is this offseason. But yeah, the fit always matters more than the talent. Maybe not always matters more, but the fit matters a lot, even relative to talent. And we've got to see if Caputo can make that happen.
Yeah, Arsenal, it just never clicked. I mean, I picked them preseason third team all ACC last year. That take looks terrible now, as does my Donald Hand on that very same team now over at Loyola Chicago. But I do really like Witherspoon at this level. He's someone who just got lost on a just god-awful offensive team last season. He needed other guards around him who could actually help set him up, but they got the requisite bigs, as you mentioned. They're going to be physical on the wings. It is a really fascinating team, but Arangur and the version we saw in February is going to have to be a full year guy.
Yeah, you need that creation, the distribution. The guy who's back, who probably excels most as a pass first kind of player, and with all the other guys coming in, as we just mentioned, like probably want some shots. You need somebody setting them up, and that's going to be his task. GW is the way they played through the post, and like just they've kind of got a different style. And I haven't believed. I remember when Caputo was getting talked about for the Miami job, Miami, Florida. And I was like, can we have him do something first? I'd like to see him do something on the court first. And last year probably should have been the year. I know Castro got hurt down the stretch, and that certainly didn't help. But they're already not in the place you wanted them to be. Like, I couldn't believe they finished well behind St. Joe's and the Steve Donahue like change of tenure over there. So yeah, it's about translating into wins, making a competent product on the court, cohesive unit, and that's still up for debate.
So Loyola, the most fascinating piece to me is Hand, but right below that, Dion Nessa, 1 year GW, absolutely rode the bench. I wish I could credit him now. I forget. I was talking to a scout while he was at GW who was just aghast that Caputo wouldn't play him. Absolutely loved him as a prospect. And it does feel a little Sebastian Thomas-y that he kind of went down to that minor league stop, goes down to Cleveland State. He's an all-conference player in the Horizon League, absolutely becomes the guy he was expected to be as a prospect. And now Loyola gets him. So they got a lot of high potential in that wing group this time around.
Yeah, and I look at the roster and like they're huge. Like positionally on the perimeter, Sterling Knox, if he plays point guard, averaged 16, 6, and 6 in junior college level, a top five JUCO guy, started his career at Creighton. Hand is 6'5", Nessa 6'7", Dayton Williams, the other JUCO guy, 6'4", Eddie Rick 6'7", has some malleability a little bit, 3 through 5. I think he can kind of play the three at times. There's a lot of length there. Agarwal from Stanford, also another guy with size. So I don't know if that was like a mandate from Drew Valentine, but it does seem like it was a part of the roster building goal there. Nessa getting him back down to that level, or getting him back up after he went down. Yeah, I think that's huge. Sometimes those guys need that confidence of like, man, it didn't click for me at my first stop. I wasn't finding my role. I felt like buried behind some better players. Then you go down, you realize you still have the talent, you still have the ability, come back up, translate it to a higher level. I think that's totally possible with him. You mentioned what you said about the scout that talked about his talent. Like, I think it was maybe Brandon Goble from JUCO Advocate, a guy that knows the international market pretty well, that he talked up Nessa pretty big when he was at GW. And to your point, not much happened there. I also think the international guys sometimes take a year. Like, the immediate acclimation to the sport doesn't always happen. And as they get, a little more comfortable with the on-campus part of it, the speed of the game, the physicality of college basketball, maybe that's something that he's just more attuned to now. Not a shooter, but he's got a lot of skill to his game, can get downhill. I think he's going to be a really nice piece there for the Ramblers.
You Drew Valentine now twice in the A-10 between the initial season and then last year. He tried to switch it up, go a little smaller, quicker, more offensive-oriented guys. Oh my God, why can I think? Dewilt Tavares, Dominic Harris, Justin Moore. And both of those teams were some of the worst that we've seen of any A-10 team over the last decade. And once again, just like he did that year after when they end up splitting the regular season title, he just goes big and steady and old again.
Yeah, it seems like he should be learning his own lesson there, and maybe stick with the old and big and steady type of regime. And you lose Miles Rubin as the big time rim protector. I think I'm okay with that.
He didn't get any better last year.
Yep, and they wanted to run a lot of stuff through him offensively, like the dribble handoff things. I just don't think that's Ruben's game. I'm very curious how that goes in the SEC, him stepping up a level after somewhat being disappointing in the A-10, but Rick Barnes is a good system for him. I just think the identity he leaned in here with like big, long, versatile, physical should play up well. You just have to have, as we said, the GW. It's a big load of newcomers that have to figure out how to coalesce and lock into roles and sit out a pecking order and figure out the minutes rotation. That's up to Valentine, and we've seen that implode before.
Yeah, Ruben was a prime candidate for A10 guy moving up who was going to just get overpaid and not do anything, which I can no longer call the Braca Okoji Award now that he's back. So maybe it's the Jaden Dawson now. The fact that he ended up at Tennessee, he's now ineligible. It's such a great fit.
Yeah, it should be a good fit. I mean, like, he's not Felix Okpara, but he makes sense as the rim protector replacement there. I'm glad you brought up Okoji. I don't want to take away and become the host here, but George Mason, the team that faded a lot down the stretch last year. I mean, they were like, I was riding them in bubble watch for a little bit, and then suddenly that was not a relevant team to that discussion. And then Tony Skin was like a hot name for the coaching carousel. That sort of fell by the wayside too this offseason. But I do love getting Okoji back, and I always respect when a coach and a player that worked together or were together initially and didn't work out are able to come around and retry the marriage. And Okoji's another example, like Nessa. He went down, he found the correct level. He should not have been at Memphis right away, but dominant, dominant player at Mercer. And now he's back, and everything else sort of filled in along the lines there. Comparatively to Loyola and to GW, I think I know a little bit more what the pecking order is at George Mason with Okoji at the very top of it. So that one makes sense too. And perhaps there is a little bit of post hype with Skin and with the Patriots because they fell off last year, and he's such a good coach.
Yeah, it's basically a Okoji, Braden O'Connor back, and then like eight power forwards, which kind of fits what Tony Skin seems to be wanting to do the last couple of years.
Yeah, he wants that physicality, and Jalen Haynes is always like such a representative of what I think Tony Skin wants to do. Doesn't necessarily have to be the tallest, but he is such a smart defensive coach with the shot diet that they force. You're not going to have a great 2-point percentage against them. It's a good season-long approach where, yeah, maybe it'll be a little bit of variance, but over the course of a season, that defense plays out really well. He went back to the UTEP. Well, I believe that was where Otis Frazier was from. He gets Elijah Jones now. I think that seemed pretty smart. Wild card, there's probably Marvell, the sophomore from UNC Greensboro. That was a pretty promising core in Greensboro, and for them to let Mike Jones there, let him go, was surprising. So you bring in Marvell, who can shoot it. He's over 50% from three on somewhat low volume last year, but that adds a little more of a perimeter element. I know it's not big time O'Connor's game. It's not hugely Okoji's game either, even though both of them can make shots. I like adding that element because, as you mentioned, there's a lot of 6'6" to 6'9" switchability, maybe, but just a lot of physicality in that group.
So you mentioned Jalen Haynes, who is now back after having a red shirt, got hurt in training camp for Cincinnati, didn't play a second for the Bearcats. Now he's going to be running this just ginormous front court next to Amaiola Tong at Dayton. And the two of them with Jayon Simon back and Malcolm Thomas as a backup, it's going to be a fantastic front court. This back court is, I have no idea. You could tell me that this ends up being great and Dunk Joseph is the breakout star of the conference, or that Travis Perry is useless and Zaid Lowry's a problem, and all of a sudden it's February and we don't understand why Dayton's guards absolutely suck. So, where are you seeing the Flyers? Because it's going to take me months to sort this roster out.
At this point, I agree with you. I think I'll probably, go back and forth on how I feel. But at this point, I'm really high on Dayton. And I think I've been a little bit cooler on them the last two off seasons. You can go back and listen to some of the three-man weave A10
You ended up
previews.
being
And
right to be, so.
yeah. So I'm hoping that lends me some credibility to be high on them this year. Joseph, the more I thought about it, I didn't love the addition just on the surface. And I dug into it, and his stretch down the end of the season was so, so good. It reminds me of Tylan Riley going from Cal Baptist to Tulsa, and he had had a nice surge at the end of his Cal Baptist career. Goes to Tulsa and he's like the alpha on a top 60 team, and they make the NIT final. And you know, if it not for like a collapse at K-State, they might have flirted with an at-large bid. Maybe Joseph is something like that, where they found that late stretch where he took over the starting gig at Marshall and really exploded, and dug in on that potential, and he capitalizes on it here at Dayton. And you just kind of need something like that to happen in the backcourt. I still kind of buy Travis Perry. I was always thinking he could be sort of the poor man's Sean Padula for Chris Beard. But when you have Haynes and Letang, I mean, I don't know what other teams do against that. It's almost an A-10 version of Morez Johnson and Ade Mara. And maybe that's going to, you know, send Dayton fans into a frenzy just even referring to that. But, you know, having a big 7-foot shot blocker, a big time bruiser who I think has some decent enough mobility in Haynes defensively. You know, look at what George Mason built defensively with him as the heart of it a couple of years back. With that group and Grant Randall as the stretch big that can play with either of them, and who knows what they get from Aiden Durkac, big time wing recruit coming in. I just think they've got talent at the top of the roster and bites at the apple to fill in around that. And that's really all you can ask for at this level. I think Dayton could be like, you know, top 50-ish team just on its surface.
Yeah, I keep seeing from other A10 people, well, how are they going to play Letang and Haynes together? Is Letang at the four the right idea? Letang was nominally playing the four that entire 6 week stretch at the end of the year when he was awesome because Jayon Simon was doing all the dirty work, five stuff. And now, not only does Simon come back, but you replace him with someone who is actually offensively skilled at that part. Letang playing the four offensively is. It should honestly be a great thing. I have zero concerns there.
Yeah, I think there was some like, oh wow, they brought in Haynes when they already have Letang. Why do they have two fives? And I'm with you. I think the fit works really well, where Haynes is a little bit more mobile defensively. You have Letang to be the rim shot blocker, and then he can space it. Like he can actually really shoot the ball. You don't want him to fall in love with it because he's still 7-1 and has really good touch and should excel around the basket too. But those guys being able to complement each other a little bit, you're not stuck playing two guys on each block and clogging up spacing for drives. Like you have versatility in the way you deploy them. And even Haynes, I think he can be a decent passer as well. He wasn't a great passer at George Mason, but I sort of bought by the skill a little bit. So I think the fit works really well there. The one guy we haven't really discussed, you mentioned him briefly, is Lowry. Not a huge fan. I think if you're at Marquette, where it's kind of this kumbaya, we keep people, we don't recruit over you with transfers, and you still can't coexist there. You quit in the middle of the season and basically are shown the door. I worry about that. I know it's a worthy gamble for Dayton. And like I said, they have bites at the apple. You know, maybe Durkac is really good, or Tristan Ford, who knows what they get out of him after he redshirted at Murray State. So you don't need him to be good, but if he hits, to go with everything else they have, like it just adds to the ceiling for Dayton.
Yeah, I mean, seniors with, or I guess even let's just say older power conference players with shaky attitudes, Zed Key, Posh Alexander, DeShane Montgomery, has not worked out all that well for Dayton. Although Montgomery is better than Dayton fans want to remember him as.
Yeah, it's been a fun topic of discussion in our Basket Under Review Discord. When Louisville got his commitment, people were like, "Why do Dayton
Kelsey's
fans
gonna
hate him
hate
so
him.
much?" Yeah.
Kelsey's gonna
Well,
hate him.
he has some eccentricities as a person, we'll say.
I'm fully prepared for the Louisville fans to just go nuclear on him by early December. And
Yeah, I could definitely see that
he
happening.
can play at that level, but he can't think at that level. So that's going to be a really fascinating one.
Yep. And like, does he want to be the fourth guard or whatever behind Woolley, behind Shellstad? Like, they filled out the roster pretty darn well. And Knox on the wing. Like, is he going to accept that? I don't know. I'm skeptical.
So the other two at the top, VCU, St. Louis. I've been going back and forth on how to properly frame this question to you. I think the right way to ask it here in late April is just which one do you feel like has the higher ceiling? If we finally get this break of the over a decade long streak of no A-10 teams in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, Is it more likely the Rams or the Billikens at this point?
I'm gonna go Billikens. I do think both have the possibility to do it. I like that both leaned in fairly well on retention. I know they, they didn't keep everybody, but I like what Slew's got, bringing back all their like basic one through four type of pieces. Dunlap would have been nice to have back. I mean, what a freaking shooter that guy is. But between Green, Jones, Thames, McCautry, that's an excellent core. You got a big time shooter in Sharma. And I kind of, we'll see how it works. I like the experiment the church is doing with the five spot. Like McKaylee, Strong. I know they've been rumored for, I think it's Sheik Pearson, the Marquette guy that redshirted last year, big time center recruit. Nothing official there yet. But getting a couple different types there. Both McKaylee and Strong showed a little bit of passing possibility. They're both big boys, wide, maybe not the most vertically explosive, but hey, neither was Robbie Avila. A little bit of shooting touch they've shown too, and maybe in a better system with better shots, they look good from that perspective too. I think SLU could have been a second weekend team this year. They just ran into Michigan and they played them competitively for 30 minutes. Not many other teams can say the same thing about that Michigan team. So even without Avila, I like what they have. I'm definitely into VCU's roster as well. It's kind of what I said as I went through this league. I was just like, man, I sort of like the approaches that a lot of them are taking. Like, we don't have to discuss Richmond, but I thought they made some smart, maybe bargain adds that they needed to fill out that roster and fit Mooney's system. But yeah, VCU's got athleticism. They added a super high ceiling guy in Blake Harper to replace the, their basic ceiling raiser in Terrence Hill. So to go with the retention that they were able to pull off, adding in Harper as that big upside scorer, I just think that made a lot of sense. And Martelli Jr. has adapted well to the A-10.
Yeah, where are you at with Blake Harper? Because he was someone we were hearing NBA buzz coming out of Howard. He goes to Creighton. He's a decent player. Lost some minutes as the season went on, ended up in a bench role, but kind of got stuck in a no man's land where wasn't good enough to get any sort of movement up. Maybe could have stuck at that kind of lower level power conference spot, but probably seems like his best spot is at that like elite mid-major.
Yeah, I think I'm impressed that he came back to this level. You sophomore year, you carve out a role for a Big East team. You think, all right, this is where I belong. I'm too good to go back down. But if VCU pays like a power conference team, then who cares what level you're at? And he's going to have pretty good defensive support around him, which he did not really have at Creighton. I think VCU maybe not built the same way as some of the Havoc teams, but they've got good athleticism in that backcourt with Jennings. I think Ward can be a decent defender with his athletic tools. Djokovic, not the best shot blocker, but he's a presence inside. And Bell is obviously, I think, a defensive animal. But Harper is weak on that end of the floor. He more wants to focus on getting a bucket. He's long, he's a little thin, but he's got good touch. And I think he just probably overbought a little bit, or Creighton overbought. Going from MEAC to Big East is like an incredible leap up in competition level. So for him to even stay as a usable piece there for them, I think speaks well. And now just whether it's humility or just, awareness to come back to the A-10 and slot in with a team that has some upside pieces around him. I like Harper. I don't think he's going to blossom into an NBA guy this year, like back into a featured role. But I think you get 2 years out of them at VCU, and that's going to be really, really deadly for that conference.
Yeah, and on the defensive side, I mean, it helps everybody that you can just stick Jennings and Bell on the other team's two best players to start with, and then just go from there. And Nick Lewis made so many nice strides at the end of the year that you can feel comfortable with him on the other guard. And so Harper's basically going to be defending fourth, maybe fifth options when he's out there with that starting lineup.
Yeah, and he's not like incompetent because he's long. So you hope guy guarding fourth, fifth piece, he's going to be okay holding up that end of the bargain. He's not like tiny where you pick on him. And it maybe, it's just most teams don't have four and five good options offensively to where you really want to target him. Maybe they try to get him in switches, work him into ball screens and stuff, and he doesn't really hold up physically that well. But it seems like very good infrastructure and good context for him to maximize what he's best at, and that's finding ways to score.
So we've basically covered six teams here. the other half of the league, just going through, because you're paying a lot more attention to the rest of the college basketball world. Is there a name or two on these rosters that you look at just like, yes, this is a guy, even not necessarily that you are confident will be a really good pickup, but just someone that you're really fascinated by?
I'm fascinated by the fit of, I believe it's Amon Dorris at Richmond, the big guy there that they brought in from Bucknell. I was worried he was going to try to be Noah Williamson and get all the way up to the Power Conference and take a payday there. But I think this is an awesome fit. He's a good passer. He's skilled, and that fits that system with Mooney wants to play through his fives and let that Princeton system play out. He was good as a freshman. He's not a hyper physical guy, but that's okay. He can step out a little bit, knock down a couple shots. He can pass it some. Him and just alongside him, Darren Sarin from UC Irvine was awesome as a freshman there. Went up to Stanford. It did not work. He had some injuries. It was bad. He boomerangs back to Irvine. Has a good year, not great because he couldn't score efficiently, but I think those are two nice. Sort of like find the right fit, bringing guys to Richmond that worked well there. Maybe Richmond's not going to challenge the top five or top three by any means, but like I think that's going to be another a very competitive team, and even getting Penn State Butler on the wings, that works for me too.
There's a lot of Penn State and Butler coming into this league.
That tells you why those teams were not great last year. They had this many A10 guys rather than Big Ten Big East players.
Yeah, so it's going to be a fascinating season nonetheless. We still got a couple more weeks. I mean, like Duquesne still doesn't even have a center, as Tristan and I'll discuss in the later part. Like right now, I think they literally have all guards and small forwards at the moment, so they're gonna have to figure it out. But Jim, you'll be following along the A10, you'll be following along the entirety of the college basketball world. One of the absolute best podcasts out there, the Three Man Weave. You got plenty of other work, but I'll let you handle the plugs.
Yeah, I'm actually my contract with The Athletic is wrapping up at the end of April, so I don't know if there's much to look at there, unfortunately. But I will definitely plug Basket Under Review. If anybody's not a part of that, please consider signing up. Only $10 a month, you get access to the Discord and the website, to really fun resources. Discord is hoops chatter at all times, and there's specific boards to the A10, to mid majors in general. Each power conference team, there's transfer portal, coaching carousel. We have Three Man Weave. We've got some specific sections in there. We can ask us questions. We're doing portal fit analysis for as many transfers as we can get to. I think we're up around 300 write-ups so far, and we'll just continue to churn them out through May to get to as many names as we can. So please consider checking out that site and the Discord. And then, yeah, I mean, the Three Man Weave College Basketball Podcast, it's free. It's on anywhere you want to listen to. We're doing a recap series looking back at last year, and we like to go through our preseason takes and say what was good. And we happily admit when we are dumb, we are bad. I didn't rank Caleb Wilson a top 100 player last year. He was an All-American at North Carolina. So more than willing to admit when we are stupid. So I think it's a fun little series. So feel free to check that out as well.
Jim, I'll plug it for you. You got a whole roster, Doc.
Hey, yeah, that's very true. That's I was cycling through it as we speak on this pod. I forget to plug it often, both on Twitter and just in my general daily life. Yeah, I track all 364 rosters that I've pretty much got it all current, up to date for like the top 12 leagues right now, which includes the A10. There may be one or two like today transfers that didn't get in there. But if you're looking for a place to just see all the current rosters, I've got the guys that are departing as well. I've got stats, a lot of per game stats, unfortunately, for the people that love the advanced analytics. But just so you can see what the guys look like, what their stats were like in previous years, transfers coming in, JUCO guys, freshmen, internationals. I'm going to have them all in there by the end of, sometime in the fall. I will have audited all of these teams and compared to the official roster doc on the team website. So it will be as accurate as possible. It's $25 to me, Venmo or PayPal, if you're interested. Happy to get you in it, and it should be hopefully endless perusing for your college basketball pleasure.
Yeah, this next segment with Tristan would not have been possible if I didn't have your little portal tracker to try to find some random mid and low major guys I've never heard of. But Jim, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
Oh, right. As part of the continuing of roster construction season, which we are coming to at a rapid pace. I mean, given when the portal opened, things still might wrap up quicker than the last two seasons, but there are still some very important holes to fill. So we're going to go through a couple of those around the A10. Think about some of the guys still left in the portal who might be good fits. And, I could only think of two people that are possibly qualified to do this segment. And one of them is the great Tristan Freeman of Busting Brackets. Tristan, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on what feels like the twilight of the transfer portal, unless we get a whole bunch of seniors coming in via some mechanism. But we'll just assume that they're not coming for now.
Yeah, which is kind of a what the hell to me because the portal opened later. There was an article I wrote this week on Busting Brackets each of the last 2 years that doesn't work anymore because there's nobody left out there. So, yeah, I don't really know what happened. We had that one big, like, 4 day rush where it seemed like all the Power Conference teams spent their money in just kind of one big burst. But just kind of looking around this league, I found that. Basically, probably about half the rosters are darn near close to set. Like Dayton's sitting at 14 guys. The rotation seems to be pretty set in stone. Maybe they add one more piece to the back end. Loyola, after the commitment of Ryan Agarwal's in a pretty similar boat. VCU, St. Louis could both certainly add maybe one more piece to the rotation, but they're probably pretty close to set. But there's still a couple of big ones. So we'll go through, we'll just draft six of the teams. You can go first because I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to pick first. And I don't want to step on it because I'm assuming you've had names for a while now.
Yeah, you might as well, because of a local connection, might as well go with the Duquesne
Well, and
Dukes.
because they literally can't field a fifth starter right now.
Yeah, I mean, they've been in the mix for, and obviously their huge need is front court. I mean, arguably a four and five, but absolutely a five. You don't have David Dixon, the four-year player for them, who is a stalwart inside. And this is a Du and Duquesne has been a team who, I think, for the last 4 years, have basically had a rotation where they basically had at least three guys play minutes at the five each game. Now they really don't have anyone on the roster. So they've been after some guys, but I think, as the A-10 knows it very well, getting big men is some of the hardest things you can do in the portal, because the price tag is ridiculous. And if you're a Duquesne, who isn't the richest team in the league, you're ultimately going to lose out. And you look at, some of the options available. I mean, one interesting one is a former A-10 big, Luke Bamboy, who was at VCU, went to Texas Tech, dealt with injuries, but he wasn't overly effective. He might ultimately just be an A-10 guy. He's someone who, Duquesne could offer a large role to instead of a split situation. Could be interesting. I mean, Damon Wilkinson, who was a new one of the latest entrants from South Dakota State, averaged 13 and 8. He could be a possible option as well. And ultimately, Duquesne just gotta find some kind of big man. Dylan Grant from Rutgers, he's not really a five, but maybe at the A-10 level he can play minutes there. But the number of bigs available who are A-10 good isn't as many as you would think, because ultimately the A-10 is still a very good conference, and you can't just be any kind of big man. And Duquesne gotta find, at least a couple, not just one. They gotta find a couple A-10 quality big men, and they're starting to run out of time.
Yeah, one name I wanted to toss in, a name that we all know quite well, someone that I assume will not be super pricey given his bad injury history, but Sean Logan, just as a backup center, a high quality option there for really anyone left at this level hunting for a five man.
Yeah, his injury history is probably what's keeping him away. I'm not sure how many teams view him as a starter. So maybe once you go through the first round of, hey, every starter caliber being gone, then he'll probably get more interest as a team's backup. But he's still, as you mentioned, he's still a proven A-10 player.
Yeah, I mean, that's someone that I would like to have for 15 minutes a game on my team. I think he's a real loss for Davidson, who couldn't keep him because of the graduation thing. But yeah, that's one for me I wanted to toss on. All right, St. Louis, who they keep about half the rotation, really went into the offseason with two meaningful holes in the roster. They needed to replace Robbie Avila, which they obviously were not going to be able to do in one player, but they have now kind of a three-man group that I guess we'll see how the summer and fall shakes out, who can win that starting position, how much of a timeshare the spot may be. But between the Colorado transfer, Alon Mikeli, who put up some unbelievable advanced stats just as a playmaker from the five position, Elijah Strong from South Carolina, who profiles as probably a much more similar player to Paul Otieno, just that big bruising rebounder, someone who can play some defense at the five. And then Jax Kerr, who played sparing minutes in garbage time as a freshman last season. What they really still need, though, is that Deion Brown replacement. Just one other option to add to that perimeter group of Green, Jones, Thames, and Sharma. And the story all offseason has been that they're looking for a pure point guard. And I felt like they could really go either way this whole time, where Green and Quentin Jones were kind of the de facto quote-unquote point guards last year, even though it was really Avila. I think they're going to really miss Deion Brown's size and the dirty work that he was able to do. Now, you're just not going to find many of those dirty work guys. You're not going to find big playmakers at this point in the portal, but just kind of looking around for someone who can bring some size, who would fit into this St. Louis offense, because at this point, I think you probably just look for someone who can check a couple of boxes. So someone like Andrea Bukmirovic from Tennessee Martin, a huge forward, someone who can shoot the three ball at a significant clip, was a first team all conference guy down in the OVC. Someone I'm honestly kind of surprised to still see floating around on the market, but 36% from three, a big time rebounder, someone who could just fill in big minutes at the three and at the four for them. Other than that, there's not a lot of really great options. A lot of the other big wings you're going to find are probably just not good enough to crack this rotation. And that's what really made this so difficult. You could take a shot at maybe like a Divine Ugochukwu from Michigan State, 45% from three, 1.5 assists per game, playing just 16 minutes a night. That's someone who could maybe kind of check a lot of those boxes in the way Deion Brown did, but it's running quite thin for them in just kind of that specific of a spot.
Well, I mean, I think the problem St. Louis has in a good way is if you're someone like the Divine Ugochukwu, you left Michigan State likely for a bigger role. I'm not sure you're going to necessarily find that with St. Louis based on what they've brought back. Yes, you can play, Kotri at the four. You can sort of spread it out, but you have guys who are very clear in their roles, and are you necessarily going to find your spot? And I agree about need a point guard, but how many ball handlers feel confident that they're going to automatically crack the rotation? Like everyone knew that they needed to replace Avila and have the front court depth, but there's a possibility that they're probably going to be set on the perimeter, and that still will be a very good team, an NCAA tournament team. But, I don't know how many players, ultimately feel like they're going to go to St. Louis and get the kind of role that they're looking for compared to the various spots that are still, fairly open.
Yeah, I mean, that could be an issue too for another guy considered Rodney Brown Jr., who's the leading scorer at Loyola Marymount. Another big time 3-point shooter, not quite the playmaker I think they'd be looking for, but we can talk about them momentarily with another team that I looked into. A lot of the best point guard options available for mid-major teams at the moment are all smaller guys. It's just a lot of 5'11 dudes, and I don't think St. Louis is going to be looking to trot out a 5'11 guy next to Quentin Jones and Trey Green. Now, for like an Ugochukwu, I do also wonder if there may be a starting spot open because Green Jones, Ishan Sharma is not going to be all that good of a perimeter group defensively. And with the Thames cramping issues, he was one of their best players this year, and yet he still came on the off the bench. I wonder if that might happen again. So, someone like an Ugochukwu, could there be 25 minutes available for him on this team? And at this point, is that something worth considering? Probably the only way he's doing better is if he just goes to a really god-awful P5 team or LSU since they have nobody. All right, you want to go into your next pick?
Yeah, want to go to an interesting team that has some really interesting pickups. I went with George Washington, who
All right, I'm
landed.
gonna make you. I'm gonna make you skip this one.
Yeah, skip
Yeah,
it.
this
Go
is my
another
next
team.
pick anyway.
Got
We
it.
screwed up on the. There was a behind the scenes screw up on the coordination on my end of how we were gonna do this. So you ended up with an extra team. But all right, go to your third one.
Okay, I went with we talked about Sean Logan of departure. I went with Davidson, who was a team who has some sneaky good returning players to their roster, and some solid pickups. I mean, Nick Janowski from St. Thomas is a really good one. You bring back Josh Govens, but their front court, which has been a strength in the past in terms of like really good players, that it stands out as a current weakness. They bring they're set to bring back, I'm pretty certain, Ian Plateau and JQ Roberts, but those are not guys that are proven scorers. So they're gonna need front court pieces. You can arguably, well, no, actually, no, you can't really say the same ones as Duquesne, because Davidson's admissions process is a bit different. So there are going to be some guys who they may not be able to necessarily get, and considering how difficult it is to get a big man in general, they could be in a bit of trouble. So, but I really like their perimeter, what they have bringing back, and I think if they can just get some kind of double digit big man, or just hope that one of the returning guys can, sort of have a breakout, then I think we could be looking at the Wildcats as a top 6 or 7 caliber team next year.
Yeah, they definitely need just another rugged backup center option, someone who could maybe displace JQ Roberts. But you mentioned it's the admissions issue. And you just lose all of these options, especially a lot of like grad transfers. I couldn't find the right guy for them. Like you're almost, and now obviously you don't have to go to some elite academic institution. They've brought in guys from Butler and St. Thomas. So it's not going to have to just be a repeat of last year where it's Brown coming in from Penn and Fredrickson from Wake Forest and Scovins from Army and Roberts from Vanderbilt. God, it's hitting me now how great they were at getting guys from other awesome academic institutions. But that's where you start just throwing darts at the board, where someone like a Peyton Marshall from Georgia Tech, 7-footer, 3 rebounds a game in just 10.5 minutes. Could he be an option there just for his final year? I don't know. And I think they have kind of issues with seniors too, as well, with the admissions process. So that's a very tricky one.
They added the Butler transfer, Jackson Keith, who's like a 6'5" wing, possibly could play some four, maybe, depending on how he acclimates to the league. But yeah, I think Davidson definitely is in the need for bigs, and maybe they just see if they can get some options out of the rest of the 2026 class.
Yeah, they're gonna be. We'll see what happens with Tom Stoiber, the 6'8 German 20-year-old pro guy they picked up yesterday. I don't know if he's a four or a five. Haven't gotten a chance to learn much about him yet. But all right, GW, what was your need? Because this to me was the easy number two, like deciding whether or not this team might be good versus terrible behind Duquesne finding centers.
Yeah, I'm curious on what you picked because of who they have arguably the most notable pickup, but I went with point guard.
Yeah, they don't have a point guard again.
I didn't know if the belief is okay, have Aaron Gurren just be that lead guy and
But he
then
wasn't last
possibly,
year.
but like, do you give him that opportunity with Jones gone? Because he
But like,
had
I do.
moments.
Well, but we learned in February when he was playing great, he's an awesome combo guard. And like he could be GW's best player this year, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they're terrible, but he cannot play point guard 30 minutes a game. There's just no way in hell it didn't work last year. They had all the same crunch time woes, whether it was Jones or Autry or Aaron Gurren running the point. Like this is the same dilemma the Houston Rockets have right now in the playoffs. You just need to have a real point guard, or you're gonna be the worst team in the country in crunch time again. Which is what KenPom luck is actually defining.
The other option is Pitt transfer Amari Witherspoon, who is the rare guard
He's not a
tweener.
point. Do we think he's a point guard?
If you go to the A10, maybe like he's not a pure shooter. He's not someone that you're going to have be an off-ball shooter. He's going to have the ball in his hands a fair amount. So like, do you just have him be that point guard and hope that he got some shooting around him? That's a tricky scenario. And plus, you got Terrence Arsenault, who we just haven't been able to see be an actual scorer, but he's a solid defender. So if he's out there, are you going to have the spacing needed?
Yeah, it just goes back to they're trying to play this almost new way of having these talented combo guards and guys who can do everything at once out there, and it works fine the first 37 minutes of the game. And they just learned the hard way last year that it doesn't work when all of a sudden you're going up against Javon Bennett or against Jahari Long. Like, these veteran point guards are going to crush you. So one of the other things that's bugged me is every one of their transfers is a power conference guy moving down, with the exception of that NJIT guy who they grabbed just to get some extra size. But six transfers: Pitt, Colorado, NC State, Georgia, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame. And they might hit on a couple of these guys, but I think we have learned that that's just a more inconsistent approach. I'd like to see them go down, grab someone who is just awesome at a lower level. And I was able to find two point guards who kind of fit the description here, who fit the need. Ironically, both of them coming from the same conference, but you have from the Big Sky, all conference first teamer, Tajon Sain from Weber State, 5'11 senior, 17.5 points a game, 4.5 assists a game. And then you also have the second teamer, Prophet Johnson from Sacramento State. So could you go out and go get one of those lower level guys who are putting up like Terrence Guignard at UT Martin type numbers?
Yeah, and also looking at guys like James and Arrington, they're not scorers. So you're going to go from Castro, who is one of the top scoring bigs in the league, to you're just hoping to have big bodies who can provide defense. And if Notre Dame transfer Ryder Frost doesn't give you much scoring at the four, then all of a sudden you're relying on those guards to have to do everything. And so I think that's something to watch, seeing how they go from Garrett Johnson to Ryder Frost at that position.
All right, who's your third team?
Third team I went with because I think, they've flown under the radar for months despite winning, but I went with St. Joe's, who probably had the most impact return player with Jaden Glover Toscano, but lost just about everyone else. And, obviously center is a big need, but similar to half the league, it's going to be hard to find one. But they're also going to need, in my opinion, they're going to need a true point guard because I don't know if you want Glover Toscano to have the ball all the time. And then, you bring back Austin Willaford, who's going to be a good player. But I feel like, the impact Derek Simpson had as a veteran playmaker was really important for them. So if you can just find another veteran ball handler, take the pressure off of, Glover Toscano, I think that'll be really helpful for the Hawks.
Yeah, the big question for me is just whether or not Kefik Meyers becomes the full-time starter at that spot. And the fact that Joe's was able to pull him back out of the portal is really fascinating. Now, I'd still like to see them at least get a veteran backup. You do mention the center spot. They've gone out and taken a couple of really big swings there. Gavin Mars, the 7-footer from Oregon State who didn't play last year. Donovan Flamer comes up from Division Two, an unheralded freshman in Davis Kemper. So I do like the approach that they have taken with the way the portal has gone this year, where they really made sure they were invested in the backcourt and keeping Glover, keeping Myers, keeping Willaford, knowing that they're going to have high-level A-10 guards, and then just going buck wild at big bodies at lower levels and hoping one of those guys works out. They need size on the wing, though. That they, to me, that was the need I was actually kind of looking at for them.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest takeaway is if you remove the teams who had, a lot of funds and could effectively fill out their needs effectively, like VCU, Dayton, and St. Louis, you still have half the league with a whole bunch of needs. And now that, most of the power conferences have sort of filled up their, projected, key rotation guys. Now I think you're going to see a run of where the quote unquote mid-major likes start to really, fill things up because now everyone understands, their pricing, their value, how much, they can pay for certain guys. So I do think, for A10 followers, next couple of weeks is going to get real busy.
All right, so my last team. This one, I know what the need is. I'm curious how much financial flexibility they have remaining. So Fordham does an unbelievable job. You talk about how much these centers are costing people. Well, Fordham keeps Rika Schulte and Jack Whitborn. They bring back Akira Jacobs, Abbas Bodija, and Rorah Kaur. So they're good in the front court. They are covered. They are going to be huge. And as we'll talk about, I'm sure, during the summer and into the fall, for these A-10 teams with elite bigs, whether it be Dayton or VCU, for the second straight year, dealing with Fordham is going to be an absolute hellscape for them because they got the guys to get down there and battle. Now, the whole backcourt, of course, a whole bunch of seniors, they've gone out. They went right for the same Day-Day Reeves just kind of archetype again, getting Amir Lindsey from the University of Albany, a first team All-America East guy, 18 points, 5 assists a game. 2 years left for him, another undersized 5'11 guy. They went out and got John LaBoy, who barely played at Miami, Florida last year, was a well-regarded recruit. But I'm wondering between what they would have had to pay those guys, plus to keep the front court, they have two highly touted local freshmen coming in. I don't know if they still have much cash left on the board. If they do, I imagine it's got to be for basically one more guy. And for that one more guy, I'd like to see them go out and just get a bigger wing, someone who can just fit like a 3-and-D spot. Kind of the hypothetical of what everyone had hoped that Zarik Nutter or Louis Lesman could have been last year if Nutter didn't get kicked off the team, or Lesmond was just simply a better player. But I was just kind of looking around the portal for guys in like a 6'3 to 6'6 range, good 3-point shooting numbers, who can generate some steals, can guard up on the wings. And it's a lot of guys who have some history of good performances who maybe shot up too high, like an Alan Breed, who was fantastic at McNeese State, went up to NC State, couldn't find a place last year. Scotty Middleton was always a promising prospect at Ohio State, wasn't very good at Tulane. Interestingly enough, as I was scrolling through, Jacob Patrick, former VCU decommit and Loyola Chicago decommit, who did manage to put up about a stock a game at Utah last year, shot 46% from three in bench minutes for them. I think he would be an interesting option. Nick Dorn from Indiana. It's a lot of just kind of potentially move down guys who just couldn't find a spot in the Power Conference musical chairs. And then maybe the most interesting, how about Amari Marshall from St. Bonaventure, who was super promising in the non-conference before a season-ending injury led to what I assume he got a red shirt for last year.
Yeah, I think that could be a very interesting pull. Like you'll have a decent floor with the guys you brought back in the front court, but again, there's a lot of pressure on LaBoy and Lindsey to be really good because replacing DeJour Reeves is going to be incredibly difficult. But if you can find someone of that caliber, then Fordham can be a top half team, and we know the great coaching job Mike McPhio did in his first year. Hopefully they have enough resources to fill out the roster because they should have a good top five. But the problem with Fordham is that what is their depth? And right now, I think that's a big question, barring the impact of whatever the freshman class can give them.
Yeah, and they're just really small in the backcourt again. And I think Nutter was supposed to solve that last season, but he only played three games. All right, any other, while you were flipping around, did you happen to catch an eye on any other needs that you really feel like could matter? For me, it was that St. Joe's kind of big wing was the only other significant one I needed to talk about. I guess VCU. If Jordan Tillery isn't going to be a meaningful part of the rotation this year, they're a little small in terms of forward depth, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rhode Island could probably use another big and probably just a pure shooter. I do like some of their pickups. I do think that they should be better offensively. Yeah, I think Duquesne probably also needs a point guard unless you want, Isaiah Pasha to be the point. He was the co-lead guard, in as a freshman in CAA, but not too sure. And then, Richmond has, a sneaky decent offseason with some of their guard pickups, but again, they also are going to need to find some more front court help.
Yeah, well, Richmond, their roster might already be full. That's why I left them off. And because they have so many freshmen coming in or coming off of red shirts. Rhode Island, you mentioned, I put them in the same bucket as St. Bonaventure, which are two teams that I feel like still need another talented rotation player or two. But just looking at the roster, there's no obvious glaring spot that I feel like they have to fill. Like, just go out and just get some other guys who can help you out. We're here. I can't believe the rosters are this filled already. It's not even May yet, but that just means we got more time to talk about them. And Tristan, you will be putting up work on busting brackets over May, throughout the summer, and well into the preseason. If the listeners are not following you yet, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can follow me at Twitter slash X at HoopsNut351.
All right, everyone, go follow Tristan. Thank you for joining me. And thank you to Jim Root for joining me as well. Thank you to all of you. who are choosing to listen here in roster construction season. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. We're going to deep dive a few of these more fascinating transfers. So be sure to come back for that.